Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. My name is Andy, and joining me on today's show is returning guests John and Jerry Tedesco. The brothers, also known as the Nightcrawler Research Team, have been on the show a couple of times now, and they are here with me to discuss their incredible work with Nightcrawler, the new funding that they've achieved, which is going to really change the game for them, some of the incredible work they've been doing over the last 12 months. They were last on the podcast back in January, around about the time of the drone flap. They discuss updates on that, some orb sightings that they've had, the data they collect around these sightings, including a black triangle, and also what their plans are going forward with the new iteration of Nightcrawler. They're onto their third system now, which looks and sounds incredible. All of that being discussed. And can I just also say, folks, very quickly before I hand over to myself, my book is available on offer in the UK on Amazon for Monday the 8th to Wednesday the 10th of December. You can get it less than half price. It's £9.50. Really great offer. It's only on for 3 days, folks. I don't know if that's happening in the US or anywhere else, but right now it's just in the UK for 3 days. Great time to pick up a copy of the book if you haven't already. But anyway, listen, enough for me. Let's hand over to the Tedescos. Welcome back to the podcast, Jerry and John Tedesco. Welcome back, gents.
Oh, it's glad to be back, Andy. Thank you.
Really good to have you both on. And folks, if you want to hear about John and Jerry's background, I've interviewed them both a couple of times now, and you may be familiar with them. They've been on Ross Coulthart's News Nation a few times. They're very well-known gents in the UFO community at this point. If you want that big detail, go back and listen to those older interviews and you'll get that. But gentlemen, for those who may be listening to you for the first time, perhaps newer to the topic, do you want to give us the kind of Cliff Notes version of who are the Tedesco brothers and what's kind of brought you to the UFO conversation?
Sure.
So we've been a research, a small research organization here on Long Island in New York. We've been conducting the research on UAPs, now getting into more of the USO type research. And the two of us have, we have a mobile laboratory that we use in order to conduct this kind of research. Both engineers, I'm a retired engineer at this point, electrical, and my brother is an aerospace engineer and mechanical as well.
Yeah, I've worked in several different industries. I'm an engineer / technologist, but I've been in aerospace. I've been in surveillance systems, private contract work for the military, for the Defense Department. I held a security clearance for 15 years.
And despite all that, unfortunately for both of you and your incredibly interesting backgrounds, the most interesting thing I think most people find is the equipment you have in the Nightcrawler vehicle, which is, for folks who have not seen it, it's like the Ecto-1 for the Ghostbusters for the UFO community. It is incredibly cool, and I think it's a toy that if it was available to buy, that most folks involved in the UFO community would want. Just give us a quick catch up on what exactly is Nightcrawler.
Sure. Actually, we're on our third Nightcrawler that we had recently just purchased. It's been retrofitted with the equipment for a phase three study. But we had two Nightcrawlers before that. One was a bottom-up design by us. We used it for 3 months of our study. The only problem was it was kind of slow, and it was very big. It was a little difficult getting under some of the bridges with all the equipment on it. Then we had a second version of Nightcrawler, which is a retrofitted Class C RV. Of course, it was modified, and that was a top-down design.
Right, and now we're in, of course, the third version of that, which is a mobile. I guess most people know them as mobile, a Class A mobile home, and it has a lot more room. We've upgraded the equipment again for the third time, and this research we hope to expand off of Long Island to other regions of the country, and then take it out on the water as well. We've been appropriately funded for the phase three research that we're going to be undertaking for 2026. And I believe with the kind of instrumentation and the experts that we're going to be interfacing with, we have a lot of SME subject matter experts out there that will be joining us. And, we hope to have maybe a few answers to the UAP saga.
Yeah, just before we talk about that funding, because that's really exciting and really welcome news for both of you. I know how much money of your own money went into the original vehicles, folks. Again, go back and check out those interviews. But this is not two cash-rich guys who have had a lottery win and decided to spend a few million dollars spare while they have a life of luxury around about that. No, this was very much retirement savings. This was your own money going into a project. It was a real passion project. It's come up now with funding. But I wanted to just ask, do you want to recap what has the last 12 months been like for you? I think it was back in January, the last time you were on with myself, towards the tail end of the drone flap. Has it even finished? I don't know.
We've been very busy, actually. We have been going out, not as often, because that requires more funding. And that's what we were doing, shopping around for funding. And luckily, we were approached by a funder, but we've been featured in recently MIT's Technology Review, and they had done a full story on us, and they had actually sent a writer and a photojournalist out with us to document what we were doing, and people could look up that article in MIT's Technology Review magazine for that. I think it's the September. August, September edition on national security. It's focused on national security technology. We were on that television program, The Proof Is Out There, twice. The most recent one was October 10th, 2025. We have been invited to attend in February and present a Human Institute's seminar or summit. It's a summit on UAP detection and tracking technology. And we've been asked to present a methodology and a technology that can be used to observe and document UAPs and objects, similar UAS systems that are unknown, that kind of thing.
Right. And this is a this is a summit that's hosted by Reed Summers.
Mm. I've just had Reed on the podcast in the last week, and I know he's been obviously very complimentary about both of you and the work you do. It's been a big year. It's been an exciting year. And I want to just take you back then to the drone flap situation, because this is one I've been pretty skeptical of, because for me, what I've seen of it, a lot of it was videos online. And with videos online comes a lot of people telling you what they have seen, but the videos don't necessarily show that. That's a little bit different for you guys who are actually using a whole range of sensors to record various different types of data across different spectrums. You can cross-analyze these things. You can look at, you know, what is BS and what is something worth looking at. So when it comes to the drone situation across the United States, and obviously now it's gone into Europe quite recently as well, Belgium and other countries are closing airports again. What is your take on what's actually going on in the skies, especially across the east coast of the US?
Well, there seems to be a periodic flap of these drones or drone-like objects. They're definitely for real. You know, we've detected and tracked them off the coast of Long Island. We've interacted with other investigative groups that have been observing them and documenting them. I mean, there are cases of mistaken identity, and some of the news programs present stock footage of aircraft sometimes, and it's not really a good reflection of what people are seeing. I mean, people have posted their original videos on YouTube. They've had shared some of them with us, and there are definitely objects that resemble the kind of objects we've seen. In the Northeast, these were occurring throughout the Northeast, but they seem to occur all over the United States in different pockets and different, you know, flaps. And we've also been talking to other investigators and researchers in Europe, and they've been repeating the same kinds of things that been observed over right. the United States.
And this is the kind of stuff too. There's been a hodgepodge of observations out there. I think there is a lot of prosaic stuff that folks have been seeing, just misidentified in some cases. But there is also, there seems to be, you know, at least in our cases, two distinct observations. One is, which appears more to be drone-like, I would say, that it has, a lot of visual lighting to it. Then there's the observations that we've been seeing on a continuous, more of a continuous basis, especially off the coast of Long Island, is orbs. These objects that basically are the size of small cars, and they come in, they've seen in various different colors: orange, blue, green, white. And they seem to change their visual acuity, their spectral range, there seems to be also a timeline with these things. With the drone flap, you know, we've seen an uptick in it back in October, November last year, and also prior to 24 as well, and. These objects seem to come out. They're observed maybe, 6-7 p.m. at night, and all the activity seems to end shortly after midnight. So there's definitely some kind of a pattern to it. And like I said, in our case, more or less two distinct observations that we were making.
Yeah, they're definitely two. We're noticing it's two different sets of objects. The ones that have this pattern is showing up at certain time frames. And these other objects seem to appear random throughout the night, in all hours. And then, like you said, they may be single, they may be clusters, they may be in pairs.
Mm-hmm.
So let's separate those in, because I think that's an obvious way to approach this. If we go first with the drone-like objects, we're looking at something that very much seems like a physical phenomenon. For you guys, and you're looking at data, you're looking at videos that are being sent to you, you're hearing testimony, you're looking at sensor equipment, you'll be looking at data other folks are collecting. Is it likely we're looking at something in terms of those drones that are human in origin, adversarial technology, Russia, China, private contractors testing stuff and misidentifications? Is there anything amongst that data for that set of phenomena that would indicate anything anomalous?
Yes. I mean, the drones we're seeing, they often have some kind of lighting, other lighting similar to navigation lights. They're not always on. They seem to do... To shut them down when they're observed, which is very interesting. Another thing is it's very difficult to get a thermal signature on them, which shows some kind of signature management. So they're objects, they're, for whatever reason, they don't want to be seen. So they're not typical commercial drones. These look more like some kind of industrial drone, or maybe military level. Maybe it could be a foreign, a foreign adversary that's testing, observing, so spying on us, over here on the coast. But there's definitely a pattern here of, that they resemble drones. We had at a recent sighting that we had a few that looked like very similar quadcopters. Although they made no sound, it was very difficult to see any rotors, but they appeared to have structures that at least the frame, a frame-like structure similar to a quadcopter or a multi, maybe something beyond a quadcopter, tetraquads, but.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's physical attributes to the observations which are, we have observed back in October, November, and some of it in December as well. I don't think it's ever gone away. I mean, it's, we're still observing this stuff, but these seem to be peak time periods, for these other objects. And at times they look, they seem to present themselves more in a prosaic way. Other times they show characteristics of something that's more anomalous. It's like Gerald said, there are times when we don't get a thermal signature to it.
The other thing is they can hover for long periods of time.
Yes.
Beyond the time frame you would have of any commercial UAS or commercial drone. These things can hover. We've once one hover for an hour, and some of them a little longer. And they'd be in stationary position and suddenly move.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Right. Yeah, I'm pretty comfortable saying at least that these things are advanced, but for me, I've not seen a lot in terms of the physical side of things that would indicate something, when I say anomalous, alien, but certainly it's a very advanced drone technology at the very least, which is still very interesting. However, there is that secondary aspect to this phenomenon, the orb situation. Again, sounding like a complete skeptic on my own UFO podcast here, I've often had to raise a lot of eyebrows when I see a lot of drone orb videos. But those tend to be because someone sent a Ring doorbell camera of a bug flying past or a piece of dust flying past. But there are some genuinely interesting orb videos. But you guys really are honing in on this. And I wonder, one of you made a comment before about, moving from UAP more to USO. And I wonder, why do you feel the need to differentiate? That's really interesting that you're going for USO. Is that purely because of the origin of these objects?
Yes, I mean, there's, of course, all the documentary reports of seeing these things over water or in the water, based on naval reports. A lot of the observations we had made, these objects seemed to be affiliated with the water, or at least this kind of affinity with the water. They would hover over the water, and some of them would look like they would touch down on the water. But most of the time, it was over the water that we would see these objects. And we have a couple of cases where they actually hovered just above the water several feet, or sat on top of the water on their edge. These luminous spherical objects. And it would rotate on top of the water, change their rotation rate, change their illumination intensity, and they would be there for long periods of time. We've seen this at least 2 to 3 times.
So I'm a complete layman. So tell me in the simplest way, what sort of data are you guys seeing and collecting that separates, one, these from the physical drone-type objects, but what's really piquing your interest when you capture these?
Sure. We're using instrumented means. We're using multi-spectral system. Like these, the three cases I'm talking about that we have, We've had them on four different multispectral cameras, and actually hyperspectral systems. We've had them intermittent radar contacts, where they've showed up on radar at the same time. We've detected them in other systems, the spectrum analyzers. We've had signals that would begin when these things would show up, disappear when these things would disappear. The signals were still going through, and that's something that we've shared with federal agencies. Of course, they have to review that, so that's not something we can actually get into as far as the signals.
Right. And the objects that, you know, if we're talking about orbs, I mean, I would say that, you know, we're not looking at, you know, obvious navigation lights, that sort of thing that you can see on prosaic or commercial traffic. It's, you know, these things are very difficult to see. Their presentation, sometimes they're visible, other times they can only be seen with night vision equipment because they're extremely low light. You know, their radiant energy, and it's at times there is no light at all. There's no visible portion of that light. It's either in the infrared or at times in the ultraviolet. And the only way to detect them is with, you know, these multispectral or a true hyperspectral system, which is what we've had to obtain. You know, it's, you know, we're looking at, you know, at times light levels, you know, below 200 nanometers. And as high up as 13 to 1400 nanometers, which is up in the shortwave infrared, which is even with night vision equipment, you don't see that. You know, so we have very targeted systems that, you know, that look at the stuff, and we can define based upon those wavelengths of some of these cameras and these detectors that we're using. You know, we know that it's actually, you know, just changing its signature. It's managing.
And that's the interesting feature of these things. Now, we have now documentation and correlations that they actually can change their spectral signatures. And they almost seem to change them at will as they're being observed, from visible to various ranges in the infrared spectrum. The next thing we want to look at is the ultraviolet spectrum, which is what we're going to do in phase three. But the other thing is these things can appear and disappear at will. And at times when they seem to disappear on the visible cameras, what they are doing is drifting into an infrared range. And sometimes they'll go beyond that, which we think is what they're doing, and we won't even see them in that range, where they just completely disappear.
And for you guys, with your really interesting background you've both got, does that seem to you like these orbs are trying to hide themselves or escape being observed, or is it almost a show of we can do this, we can change, because they know you've got these different sensors? What's your take?
Yes, I mean, our belief is that it's deliberate. It's an attempt to hide themselves. It's a form of... signature management.
Right. And this is something we've observed just the other day. I mean, it's a week and a half ago, we had an observation that we have a fairly expensive FLIR camera system on the mobile lab, and it's early morning we had a presentation of an orb of light that was present on both the thermal cameras, on the FLIR thermal and as well as the night vision, a deep night vision camera. When I was changing, spectral ranges and going from white hot to black hot, I noticed the thermal part of the signature disappeared. The object was still there. It's still there in the visible or the infrared at that point, but completely disappeared, from the thermal side of the signature. And this is something that's, you know, we're looking at, wavelengths of, between 7 and 14, micrometers, so this is a very, very short wavelength.
The interesting thing, when we see it in long range, that's an object that's giving off heat. And if you would think of something with a propulsion system or a rotor driven system, it's going to produce heat. So that's not a surprise that would show up in the long range. The fact that it disappeared from the long range after running and hovering in the air for some time doesn't make a lot of sense. It's like there's no heat signature.
And you mentioned three particular cases that you've reported on. Are these the ones that were from July and September?
Yes, we gave you a copy of a report from July 5th.
Yeah.
An orb underwater, This was tracked on four different multispectral cameras, including a FLIR system. The object, we had talked about it on Ross Coulthard, but the object had suddenly appeared in front of us. We watched it stationary, sitting on the surface of the water, not disturbing the water, and not being disturbed by the wave action of the ocean. And then this thing, object suddenly moved. It was extremely luminous in the OIR. We couldn't see it visibly. It moved to the east along the surface of the water, didn't disturb anything. It was in a fixed position as it was moving. It wasn't bouncing up and down like you would expect moving through the water. It moved to the east some distance and made a sharp turn and came up over the beach. And it flew over the beach at an elevation of about 5 feet. Went midway over the beach and suddenly disappeared, and we couldn't acquire it again.
Yeah, very much independent of what was going on the surface of the ocean. I mean, there was no ocean currents that was carrying in any specific direction. It didn't bob on top of wave crests. I mean, this it seemed to be, has an own source of propulsion.
Yeah.
But didn't disturb the water, which is interesting.
And we say self-propelled because even wind direction, wind speeds, this moved in its own direction regardless of the wind direction. Like I said, it changed course. It came up over the beach northward and just suddenly disappeared. This was, we've had people, after Ross Coulthard interview, we had people saying it was a buoy, it was a flotation device, it was a low aircraft, but it was none of those things. That's something we routinely look into. We have a checklist of prosaics we look at. And like I said, this is what instrumented means. It's not just it's not with our eyes.
Mm-hmm. And multiple observations, multiple observers.
Yeah, we had three observers out there.
And that's why I like talking to you guys. And folks might hear me sometimes when I hear about really interesting events or sightings, or that's great and I really enjoy taking those in. But there's a limitation in terms of data, sensors, even knowledge around certain things outside of that. And that goes for myself. I'm no former pilot or physicist or anything like that. But you guys already in your heads go, okay, I've seen something. We've got something here. What can it not be? Bang, bang, bang. And you're already starting to process that and run it through to figure out, is this worth your time? Because time is money and that equipment is expensive to run. So you're not going to waste your time filming the sky 24/7 and every little object that floats past. And for you, are you thinking the phenomena you're capturing with these orbs is all one thing? Is there any patterns or signatures you notice that are very different from each other that would indicate maybe a range of phenomena?
As far as the orb-like objects, they don't fit any specific pattern. They seem to be very random. They seem to loiter along the shoreline, whether sitting on the water or touching down the water. We have one incident where we had one hovering over the beach and actually casting a light on the beach. It was maybe 10 feet above the beach.
Yeah, between 10 and 15 feet.
And it would hover there, extremely bright. It's extremely luminous. It was a rotating star-like object that would flicker. It looked like almost like a fireball, and it was casting an extreme intense light on the grass and beach area.
Right, and you could see this light. You could see the rotation of the object. These objects are in rotation, but you can visualize it. You can see it reflecting off the beach sand, off the grass that may be there, very, very defined patterns. And then these objects would suddenly, disappear out of the visible spectrum, and we'd catch them in the infrared, the near infrared, or the shortwave infrared.
And there's an interesting feature. When we use high mag multispectral cameras to zoom in on them, as we would zoom in on them, they would suddenly disappear.
They know you're looking at them in more detail.
Yes, they had an awareness that they were being observed.
There's some kind of an awareness of them. And, this is something, again, this is, we've seen this pattern over and over and over again. The other thing is that these objects, even being relatively close, like this observation that Gerald just discussed, the object was roughly 525 meters from our observation point. And with the zoom capability of these cameras, you know, this should have been, the object should have been in decent focus. We should have been able to see the detail. We weren't able to do that. Almost as though is that, you know, we were, you know, having, there was some kind of an envelope or of a distortion of that field around it, distorting light, something, a gravitational lens of some sort, that was producing this kind of distortion. And we've made, you know, these reference, comparisons before from aircraft. You know, we'd observe these balls of light, and you'd had an aircraft that was at a further altitude, at a greater distance. They would be in exceptional detail. Mm-hmm. We could actually, you know, read the writing on the airliner and so forth.
Yeah, we could make out all the navigation lights.
Right.
So this object would be the edges would be difficult to make out. They weren't fine, and it would shimmer. The light would shimmer. All you could see was this bright orb of light. Without any structural detail.
Right, very much diffused.
Yeah.
You can both help me out here, and I'm sure many, many listeners who have to speak about this topic with mm-hmm. friends and family and members of the public, right? Because that's something that I found when people talk about there's no good pictures of UFOs, and I think a more commonly understood idea is this gravitational lensing. Are many of these objects surrounded by some kind of bubble? They're caught within a bubble that allows them to move. Perhaps they're not even flying through the air. They're independent of our atmosphere, and whatever they're contained within makes it difficult for any camera to capture any decent level of detail. But when you say that to a friend or family, I'm sure you guys might get this as well, depending on your friends, they just go, that's bullshit. That's such an obvious excuse why you can't get a good picture. Is there a way you guys can think of getting around that, or something we can do to have that conversation? Or what are you guys trying to do to get past that, if anything?
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify has got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Well, like I said, there's several of these objects we actually, we use high mag cameras. We use 60 times, 120 times zoom, and we still couldn't get the detail. We'd see this bright orb of light. In some cases, we would see a perfect sphere. And our thought is that there may be some kind of enclosure, a bubble, a transparent bubble that's trapping this light. So it makes it look like the ones that look perfectly spherical is that it's trapping the light. Right. And there's the others, of course, the edges, it looks like more of a fireball with shimmering edges that never are in focus. They're almost always slightly out of focus.
And some of these objects are defined as being, in other words, they change shape, they're morphing in some way. You know, that's a possibility. I guess they may be, but, you know, we wonder whether or not, you know, that morphing, that distortion is actually the gravitational lensing of some kind of an effect around it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's giving the illusion that the object is changing shape.
Right. If you're distorting the atmosphere around it, I mean, the object's going to look like it's changing shape.
Yep.
Well, we can't put a lot of faith in the fact that they look like they're morphing.
Right.
There could be some kind of field around it that's causing that distortion.
Yeah, we simply don't have enough information.
And that's something that, of course, we, you know, phase three, we want to look closer at that.
Absolutely. And you guys, you caught a black triangle back in September. Is that right? September 7th, Holbrook?
Actually, it was August 29th.
Oh, I was so close. I was so close. That might have been the report date. I don't know. But I was in the ballpark. But can you talk through what happened there? Because obviously shifting on from orbs to a black triangle.
Sure. This was on a Friday that I, John, we were planning on going out that weekend, and we were doing test runs on the equipment, which we do with Cal equipment, run some controls. And we were testing out, we were running test controls on the spectrum analyzers and the radar at that time. It was about four, 4:15, 4:18, something like that, PM. I had stopped at the RV, which is at John's house, when he was running the tests. We noticed that we were picking up very bizarre signals on the spectrum analyzers. We had two spectrum analyzers. They were going off scale with these signals. We couldn't determine where they were coming from at that time. We noticed there was a target on radar that was emerging from a cloud. And the interesting thing is we left the RV to look to see the direction it was coming from on the radar. And the cloud it looked like a storm cloud, a cumulonimbus, like a thunderhead, a thunderstorm cloud.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing, it wasn't showing up on the radar, though, which we had adjusted what's called a clutter setting, the clutter sensitivity, where we could see the precipitation, the moisture in it. Now, storm clouds, you'd have a lot of moisture. We didn't see this on radar. So the interesting thing is we got some cameras. We had to look at the cloud itself, where the object seemed to be hidden within. It emerged. We watched it on a vortex binocular, which has really good optics. John noticed it first and handed it to me. I took a cell phone camera video. It was emerging. This was a very black, solid structured object. It appeared to be triangular or bell-shaped when it was emerging from the cloud. We also went back to the mobile lab, which we watched it followed on radar. It was moving in the direction that we were seeing it in. We video clip taped it, recorded for some time. There was a second or third object that we couldn't track because they were moving too fast. They looked like they're moving at a hypersonic speed, and we couldn't track them with the cameras. Only this one slower moving one that kept at a slower pace, moving across the sky. The radar showed one target, then showed three. Showed one distinct target, then showed three targets split up. We think it was the objects were probably flying close to each other, so they had what's called a merge plot. Mm-hmm. The radar couldn't distinguish the difference between the three targets; they were too close. But when they separated, we were able to see that on radar. We were also able to see it on the cameras. There was at least two to three separate objects.
Right.
Two hypersonically moving, and the other one at a slow pace.
Yeah, and this was also was causing a disturbance in the RF spectrum. We were monitoring the radio spectrum at that point, and we noticed that there were key indicators or key transitory spikes in the RF part of the spectrum, and also causing magnetic anomalies that we were measuring, you know, within the close vicinity of the RV, of the mobile lab. Some of the stuff seemed to be ground based. Very, very odd undulations of the signal itself. At times, what seemed to be, what they call, overmodulation of the signal. But all these disturbances seem to have occurred at the time of the observation, and slowly after, just dissipated. to some extent.
Yeah, equidistant signals, and there's something we can't get into, the frequency range or where they peaked, because this is something we shared with the FBI, and they're conducting their own investigation. So as far as the signals go, that's
right. And something else I'll mention also is that again, we talked earlier about this possibility of a gravitational lens. We had a reference of another object, an airliner that was at a much higher altitude than the object that we were observing, this black triangle. The airliner was very, very clear in the optics. We could see it. We could identify the airliner. This is with a 20 times zoom at the time, optical zoom. The black triangle is very distorted, lacked detail.
The other thing is the edges would shimmer as it was moving.
Right, as though there was some kind of a field around it.
No navigation lights, solid black. The thing was solid black. Probably moving, the slower one was moving about between 120 to 160 miles per hour. No, 200 miles per hour.
Mm-hmm.
And we estimated the speed up as we calculated that. And for the people calling out saying it was a balloon or something, the wind speed at the elevation that we tracked it on radar was 14 miles per hour. That's the wind speed. That is, if this is a balloon, there's no way a balloon is going to move faster than the wind speed. That's impossible. This object said it was moving about 200, over 200 miles per hour.
At that altitude, we're actually looking at that altitude, the wind speed, the wind currents at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Gerald said, an object that's moving within the wind currents of 14 miles per hour, we would expect 14 miles per hour. We wouldn't expect 200 miles per hour.
I wonder what your guys' thoughts are on this. Say your benefactor, and we're going to come on to the funding in just a moment. Say they gave you a ridiculous sum of money that you could purchase 500 night crawlers kitted out to the standard you would want. If you place those all around the United States, along all areas of the coast, okay, do you think they would all pick up in all areas the sort of phenomena you're reading?
I think they would have a really good chance of, we're picking up data with the one night crawler. And like I said, we're using specific equipment. We're using the right equipment, and that's why the success we're getting. I believe that we'd get a lot more success if we expanded this operation.
Yeah, and you're talking about there's folks out there to talk about multispectral, true multispectral hyperspectral cameras, detectors, and that sort of thing. I mean, we're looking at a wide range of the electromagnetic spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just near infrared. It's not just the visible light. I mean, we are looking at the extremes. And that's why I believe we're able to identify or actually observe more out there that doesn't align prosaically.
Yeah, I mean, we're using a huge bandwidth and a high resolution of these equipment. They're top-of-line equipment.
Mm-hmm.
With the amount of work you're doing both in the exposure, do either of you suffer any medical effects? I know that's a personal question that you feel may be related to the phenomena.
We did in August of 22.
22, yeah.
Which we had talked about of a triangular formation of objects that appeared off the coast. Of course, we teased it with an IR emitter and a high-end torch. To see if they would reflect light and to see if they were close enough to reflect light,
yep.
They would respond to the light as we flashed it over them. They did respond. One of these orb-like objects rapidly came to the shoreline, overloaded our cameras with some kind of electromagnetic interference. We lost muscle tone in our legs and we collapsed on the beach for less than maybe 45 seconds. Of course, the cameras started to come back after that period. Our legs responded after that time period. So our belief was it was some kind of threat assessment by whatever this was out there.
Hmm.
It was definitely a physical manifestation.
Yeah, we were stopped by what we were doing and whatever this was, it surveyed us. It seems to have I mean, we watched the videos after the camera did record intermittently, and it was something that entered the optics. The macros were changed on the camera, on the equipment. There were mechanical manipulations of some of the switches and other things on the camera, on the hyperspectral cameras.
Yeah, which you could clearly hear. I mean, it's some of the electrical disturbances. You know, in my career, I worked as a camera service technician, and a lot of these similar faults that we have with the camera systems, where macros were changed, the data was corrupted. I mean, these are memory locations within the camera that store or house some of these routine functions of the camera, you know, which might be user defined or part of the operating design of the camera. Some of them were altered and not damaged. The camera wasn't damaged other than the fact that I had to reestablish these memory locations again, reestablish the data. And that's something that I generally saw after an electrical storm, where you'd have appliances that would, misbehave and, some things would change. You'd have to reinitialize, repower up the product, sometimes unplug it, plug it back in again, and do like a master reset in order to reestablish those locations. Within the cameras themselves, I actually had to go in there and change those data values that were electrically altered by what seemingly could have been an EMP of some sort.
And I want to say something. We were in disbelief. It was shocking, and we were in total disbelief for the first 2 weeks after that. We did a full failure analysis on our equipment to see if there was some kind of artifact, or maybe we were, imagining it, the rest, because it was surreal. The experience was surreal. So we did a failure analysis. We found, like I said, these changes that John talked about. It was three different cameras that were affected. The other thing is, when we talk about physical effects, we had some flaccid paralysis, a form of flaccid paralysis that lasted 45 seconds. We had fatigue that lasted probably 24 hours. We both had tender lymph nodes, joint under his armpits, I think, and mine was in my neck area. Lasted about 24 hours, 12 to 24 hours.
But that's good. Nothing since then, and you don't have any kind of hitchhiker effect or anything like that following you.
We haven't noticed any long-term physical medical effects. We have had hitchhiker effects, and that's everybody in our team.
Right.
Where it appeared that some of these objects had followed us or appeared at our homes. John actually has we have a recording of the Nightcrawlers parked outside John's place at night, and he keeps the equipment running at night. And we have actually recordings of some kind of encounter and shutting down of the traffic lights, three traffic lights around the night crawl that was shut down by something that appeared to be above the night crawl. And we say that because this photo sensors on top of those lights, those street lights, that are, and in order to shut them down or turn them off, the light has to be shining above them.
Yeah.
Above
them.
Yep.
And what Gerald's talking is actually the streetlights, not traffic signals or something like
right,
that.
Right, the streetlights themselves.
And just the streetlights. You know, the streetlights work by they have a photo sensor on top of the housing of the lamp, which is either a mercury vapor or some kind of an argon lamp system, a discharge system. And these lights come on at night once the sun goes down. With a sensor, there's no light impinging on the sensor, causing the light to shut off during the day. So first thing in the morning, of course, when the sun rises, it impinges enough light to shut those sensors off. This object was bright enough that shut down four streetlights in close proximity to where the mobile laboratory was.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
And it was interesting to see these four streetlights all go out and sequentially within a fraction of a second.
Mm-hmm. And what you would see on the cameras, if it was a night crawler, the cameras were recording a light that was mostly, it was all in the UV, in the infrared. It was infrared emitted light. You would see it descending down on a roll bar on the back of the RV. You would see a light on top of it, reflecting light downward, expanding as though something that was like descending down on the vehicle. Mm-hmm. After the street lamps are shut down.
Right.
Is that video available?
Yes, we have the video. Absolutely. We had, I believe we showed it, maybe it was on a Chris Lado program.
Right, I think it was on several different podcasts.
Yeah. We did show parts of it.
I've seen a lot of your guys' interviews, so I may have seen it, but I'll need to try that.
We could send you that video.
Right, we'll send you
if you've got it, that would be awesome. And listen, let's go on to this funding announcement, because this is really exciting, because I'm glad of all the folks getting this kind of stuff. I think you two guys definitely deserve it for what you're attempting to do, what you are doing, the work and the lengths you're going to investigate this. It's something that's sorely missing. Nightcrawler's a 501c3 non-profit. You've got a multi-year funding that's come about. Can you talk about as much as you can what's happened, how this has come about, and what the plans are?
Sure. This funder had reached out to us. It was somebody associated with the MIT Technology Review, and in an advisory capacity. We can't say much more about the funder. He doesn't really want to talk about it. We were funded for a three-year project to get phase three going off the ground and to purchase the kind of equipment we needed. So our objective is to expand our land operation. The first thing we did was purchase, of course, a new Nightcrawler, four-wheel drive. This is a unique system. It's only 14 made in the United States. So it's very, 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 very unique, very specific for what we needed it for.
Right.
We want to expand the land operation outside of Long Island, depending on hot spots, and of course that will be determined. The other thing is we want to get into a maritime version of the Nightcrawler, maritime operation, using a retrofitted boat or a chartered vessel going out to sea, and we want to equip it. Mini ROVs, an omnidirectional sonar system, so we can map the seafloor. We can map a 360 degree circle around where the boat is. We'll be using different kinds of side scan sonar. We'll be using our radar to scan the surface of the water and above that. So plus all these hyperspectral equipment that will be brought out. So it'll be a greatly expanded operation and really looking into USOs.
Right. And was specifically interested in the deep water caverns down there, the cliffs out by off the coast of Long Island.
There's a deep water trench that's in the Atlantic over there. We want to take a look at that. We could set up a primary hiding spot if there was something that existed under mm-hmm. the ocean or was the point of operation. This will be a nice hiding spot, so we definitely want to look into the trench.
So these would be the areas that we'd be focused on during that study.
And does this funding come with any limitations or obligations around transparency? Having a backer or a funder, some folks might worry, are they looking for exclusivity on data? Do you have to report to them first? How does that affect how you guys work?
No.
We're pretty flexible. We do have to report to the funder. This person has also been involved in research at some point. Also been involved in government at one point. So we'll share with them, but we can be totally transparent with
them. Yeah. And this is what's expected. This is what he wants these folks, and of course what we want as well. It's this is for the public domain. it's a point of interest, you know, significant interest out there. And, you know, we want to focus on the right equipment. It's been appropriately funded for that, you know, to do that and allow us to do that. And that's something that I think, you know, under those specific guidelines and the specifications of the equipment that we're using, that we're hoping to get significant data from that.
Mm-hmm. That's exciting.
This will be a fourth generation system for us.
Exactly.
Both proprietary and military laboratory grade equipment.
And can you give me in just a couple of lines, so again, someone like myself can understand, complete layman, what are you going to now capture with this funding that you couldn't capture before? What's it going to allow you to do?
So, well, it's going to increase our bandwidth. It's going to increase the resolution of what we're getting, and that John can probably
And this issue with signature management, you know, being able to capture that in real time, you know, if these things are undergoing the signature management, where in one moment it's visible and it could be, you know, moving into the ultraviolet, changing its radar signatures, changing some of its acoustic signatures and that sort of thing. We want to be able to capture all of that. And the only way we can do that is having multiple sources of equipment, multiple detection equipment that can cover a full range of the electromagnetic spectrum at any one time.
And this is going to be improved radar, two improved radar systems, improved hyperspectral system, saluted cue to the radar, this light bulb.
Yeah, so there'll be multiple captures at the same time. I mean, this is something that, you know, we want, you know, correlating data with multiple systems, even redundant systems.
Yeah, it's really exciting stuff. And there is another exciting project that's coming up next year. Do you guys want to mention what's coming up before I play the trailer, or should I play the trailer first?
We could briefly mention we're scheduled to have two documentaries released in 2026, one from an American film crew, one from a Canadian film crew. They had come out and followed us out there and documented what we were doing. And you could play the
trailer. And it's a documentation, you know, the documentary is basically geared to you know, show this four year research study, how we got started, and, you know, the data itself, and of course our future endeavors as well is trying to capture, you know, whatever we learn from the earlier data. We want to move on and capture something that might be a little bit more significant and, you know, more advanced, things that are happening when people are saying that these things are difficult to see, or they seem to, you know, change from one signature to another. You know, we want to be able to, you know, put this in some kind of context that it, you know, that we understand what's happening.
The good thing is we've collected good data. We know the ranges that they seem to be operating at, and we're certainly going to pursue that.
Awesome. Well, I'll play that trailer now, so if you're watching or listening, you will either see and or hear the trailer, folks.
This is it. This is paradise.
They said this, watch for landmines. We're at Camp Hero.
This is the tip of the tail of Long Island.
You hear these crazy stories about different kinds of experimentations that were done out here with biological and as well as technological.
July 26th, there's a ship out there. These objects seem to delay that radar return coming back. Whether it's a field around them or something, this seems to be a something creating a delay.
All right, there he is. Starting to pick him up now. And he's roughly two miles out. Look, Joe.
The arachnid attacks. Hopefully that's not the most exciting thing for tonight.
We got this up close and personal view of the Nightcrawler. This is a retrofitted RV rolling mobile lab. John and Jerry Tedesco turn over their findings. The FBI is said to be looking at what they have recently spotted.
I'm calling them the UFO busters, man. They're like the Ghostbusters, except with the UFOs.
We started doing this study in July of 2022.
We spend many, many nights out there, 12-hour days, overnights. You know, we have so much equipment, so many different cameras, so many detectors, hyperspectral, multispectral.
Recording ADS-B, radar,
and the video.
You see it? Yeah, it's on this camera. It's stationary.
Well, let's get a camera on it.
We've got this issue of anomalous phenomena. People see something they don't understand and scares them. They call the police. Equipment like this can better detect, identify, track UAP. Our air bases, our military bases, our nuclear sites are getting visited by these, whatever they are. People that see stuff flying over their house the size of a car. I just want to know how to defend against it. That's my job.
Dad, I literally see it right here. It's a plane.
He's our resident skeptic here. So he doesn't believe any of this stuff.
We invite skeptics of all kinds. We've run up against some of the best of them.
Yeah, but it could just be a cloud.
Yeah, well, I got to look at the videos over and over and over again. I'm not really sure what I saw, you know, it's like, but I know what I experienced. So it kind of reaffirms that there was a light there. There was this.
Just be more as like precise and accurate as possible.
Be skeptical, but have an open mind.
We come from the generation, the explorers, dreamers were big. And I think we were dreamers. Lucky to be able to at least do this, get out there and enjoy the great outdoors while accomplishing something that's significant, you know?
They achieved the almost impossible task of getting a field research study on UFOs peer-reviewed and published in the Open Journal of Applied Sciences. Their research has captured the attention of some very influential scientists.
I don't believe reality's laid out the way we think it is. Think a piece of paper, that's reality, and you crumpled it up.
We know from science that everything is bound together by nuclear forces. Even solid objects that are around us are not really solid. You know, could it be some kind of simulation? Possibly a playground? Created from consciousness itself.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Okay, now it's there, and watch, it disappears.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about, son.
To this day, I think we've probably cataloged well over a million objects. There is a lot going on out there. Let's figure out what this is.
There it is.
All right, I'm gonna light it up. I'm gonna light it up.
And then there was, I want to thank Randy Jackson, the lead singer of Zebra.
He actually came out with us two times. He was a human audio generator.
Yeah, and he was a big help calibrating our system.
Oh, yeah, huge, huge help. Thank you, Randy.
And great music, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Love this music.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
And the trailer's played, so really excited to see that, gents. Looking forward to seeing what comes from it. You guys have a nice chemistry on camera as well, which is always good to watch. Yeah. And documentaries are kind of on everyone's tongue. And just before, as we start to kind of wrap up towards the end of the interview, Age of Disclosure, the documentary's out. Have you guys had the chance to watch that yet?
Yes.
And if you have, what's your kind of quick take on what it shows?
John and I watched it after it came out. I want to commend all the people who came forward in the government and the whistleblowers. That's great. Whether it's going to change any opinions, I don't think that's too likely. I mean, the fact is there was a lot of expression of what people saw and their opinions. I think the people who already believe it and have followed it, that will keep them, you know, quite a bit much more interested. Maybe it'll bring some more people in as a large effect. I don't know. I don't think so because and we have seen a similar type of disclosure movement
done in 2001 with the Disclosure Project. We had, you know, radar operators and people come forward. They actually brought data and radar tapes and talked about switches. And that didn't seem to change as many minds as we thought it would. So my feeling is it's probably going to be the same thing here.
Right. I mean, for folks that haven't followed it, it's, for the general populace, I mean, there's, maybe it brought a few more people in on board and to look at this phenomena that, but as far as, information that's already been out there, I don't think it's shed any more light on it, to be honest.
Yeah, I've shared my views plenty on here. People will know what those are. I was just curious and what you guys thought. Sure. What I'd love to do in just the last few minutes is fly through some listener questions. If you guys want to just smash out some answers for us, that would be great. I've cut out a few questions, folks. If you don't hear your question, it was probably because it's been answered already by the guys in the interview. If not, I'll get to some stuff next time. But let's go through these to finish off. Parsival over on the Discord said, could the larger drones in New Jersey have been the Anduril flying car prototypes?
I mean, some of those things are possible. The only thing is there were so many seen across the United States, and there were very high numbers in a short period of time. I would think if there was these rare test flights of experimental, whether the cars or flying cars or drones, it wouldn't account for all the sightings. The other thing is I think it's insulting to say that most people were mistaken about what they were seeing. In New Jersey, there's a lot of air traffic over New Jersey and over the Northeast. These people are used to seeing air traffic.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're seeing something very different, which is, is making them pay more attention to the skies. That's my thought, anyway.
Yeah. Christian from Kill the Stigma podcast. Now, this might be a question you say I can't answer because you've told me this twice already, and that's why I did not follow up on it. Did you pick up any frequencies from the mystery drone type UAPs? 1.6 gigahertz, 3 gigahertz, 8 to 12 gigahertz, X-band 7 to 11.2. This is something that Chris Mellon wrote about recently that was mentioned by Arrow witnesses in the Senate hearings.
We have picked up signals. I don't think we want to get into specifics on that yet.
Yeah, I mean,
the 1.6 is kind of is interesting.
Yeah, I mean, there are other frequencies involved, but,
three gig is interesting. There are other frequencies involved, other signals.
Can you tell me why frequencies are interesting then? Just and generally speak around that whole frequency thing. Why is it interesting? What could it mean?
Well, when these objects are present, these signals seem to be more abundant. The amplitude seem to be exceptionally high in some cases. This could be remote operations from some other point, even through, even the possibility of remote control through satellite transmission. So, it doesn't have to be a local, some kind of a local group that's actually doing the navigation and that sort of thing. I mean, and this was what, where some of the concerns come in, of course, could it be a foreign adversary, that sort of thing, or, a foreign government that's doing it. But some of the signals are very transitory too, and have some interesting, harmonic effects that,
Yeah, there's very specifics about them. They make them very interesting. They stand out.
Yeah.
It's not the typical, signals with sidebands you'd see with normal remote operations of drones or broadcast frequencies. And we have a database normal background frequencies are being transmitted from different sources.
Right.
So we compare that to that.
Yeah, and these
are quite different. They're quite unique.
Right, and there's confounding variables with that too. You have so much in the way of cellular transmissions and 4G and 5G and you got to kind of separate some of those components, which can be very difficult. A lot of these frequencies, especially with some of the systems we have and are putting online, which is, spectrum equipment that's specifically designed for 3D analysis is to pull out some of these hidden frequencies and look at them.
Mm-hmm.
a little bit.
So again, I can think, I can understand why governments would want to know that, because you're being able to pick up some really sensitive stuff. And is it a bit like, and this is just from my understanding, that you've found some really cool remote control cars that are being controlled locally that they might want to know about, but also there are some that are being controlled from other countries or places out in the ocean, from container ships that we hear rumours of, or there's something that's really, really, really far away and that could give off an interesting signal that something's controlling it from different planet, area, dimension, that kind of stuff,
And we're considering all those things. They're all on the table.
Cool. Good answer. Rod says, who do you think is behind the worldwide drone flap, and do you have any plans to come to Texas?
That's a possibility.
We'll look at the invitations.
So as somebody sends us an invitation, there seems to be a high frequency of sightings and activity in that area.
Yeah, and there's a lot of areas that we'd love to go to. Yeah. I mean, out in California, off the coast there, especially where, they've had, sightings from some of the Navy crews out there. Some of the battle command centers that they had. Also on the East Coast as well, up and down, it doesn't matter. It's wherever the activity is where we'd like to be.
Awesome. Ricky asks, did your East Coast drone fieldwork provide lessons learned for future assignments?
Absolutely. And it took time to get there.
Yeah, it was a lot of data review, a lot of analysis that went still going on.
Yeah, that the importance of boots on the ground. You have to be there. You have to be monitoring this stuff. You have to make mistakes. And that's the only way you can move forward.
And I imagine some of that is what we're going to see in the documentary.
Sure.
Yes.
Sure. Yep.
Kevin asks, have your recent findings been shared with mainstream news outlets beside News Nation, and has there been any response?
We tried on a couple of days, they never responded.
There
was no response.
Exactly. Doesn't seem to be a lot of interest in this with some news agencies,
And it seems to be very cyclical and a bit of a roller coaster, in the UK. Our news, BBC, Sky News, GB News, the kind of big outlets, they don't report on the drone stuff. It's not a big story. Right. Airports being shut down across Europe, rarely touched on. And even the US hearing stuff recently, the Charlie Kirk situation happened within 24 hours. The hearings never touched aside on the news. So a lot of stuff can happen to take over.
It's a shame. You would think that would be big news. And it's a failure. It's a real failure of journalism.
Yeah.
Last two questions. Tracy asks, have you ever been warned or threatened to back off of your research?
No, but we've had uninvited visitors that seem to accompany us out there in unmarked vehicles and dark, unmarked, tinted windows.
Certainly interested in what we were doing.
And which shouldn't be out there, because we have a permit to be out there all night long, and in order to be out there, you either have to have a research permit like we have, or a sky gazing permit, or you have to be a fisherman, which they're out there maybe till 12, one, and they're gone at that, usually 12. But these people, we had visitors that were out there 1 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning, for maybe an hour or so, and then they would drive off.
Yeah, so definitely some interest in what we were doing.
So somebody interested in what we were doing.
Okay. And finally, any update on working with the FBI? What have you shared and what's the current status?
Status is good. It's been very productive. We have formed a partnership with them, and we're going to continue that.
Right. We're trying to, of course, we want to be as transparent as possible.
We're going to try to be as transparent as possible, because we have to respect the boundaries of whatever we... we're involved with them.
And I want to say that we're not read into those programs. So it's not, it's not like, we're given any additional information for what we
share. Yeah, we didn't get any special clearance.
But, no.
Yeah, you just don't want to piss off the FBI, which I imagine is not, right. It's not a good idea.
There's a lot of sensitive things there, yeah.
Right, but yeah. They're genuinely interested in what's going on and definitely trying to find an answer.
Yeah, they definitely were. They're definitely taking it seriously.
Absolutely, they're taking it seriously.
And I do have to steal one more question from you, from myself as a listener, okay, and a fan of both of yours and your work. Skywatcher, as an organisation, came to prominence just after we last spoke. What's your take on what they're claiming to do and trying to do and record and collect data?
Okay, so I want to be perfectly fair.
Yeah.
You know, I give them credit for what they're doing and what they're trying to do. From what I've seen so far, I mean, the data they've showed so far, they were kind of low resolution, some IR, not the greatest. I haven't seen the level of equipment they've talked to, at least not produced on anything that they've showed so far. The videos I've seen out in the field, I haven't seen, I just haven't seen the kind of equipment that, they're talking about. Right. Maybe they are.
If it is something, we hear a lot of things, about the type of equipment they have and the sophistication of the equipment. We'd like to see it. We'd like to see some of that data, be publicly provided and that folks can look at it and examine it for themselves. I mean, Jerry was saying that the quality of a lot of it is not, it's very difficult to make any kind of an informed decision on what it is that you're looking at.
Yeah, and still, there's always different, like they talk about 9 to 11 morphologies of objects. I don't know.
Yep.
Maybe some of them, possibly, but there's others that seem out of focus, and like something like a blob. They call it blob. A lot of it looks at, some of those look out of focus, so you really can't quantify that as a specific morphology, at least not to us.
Yeah, if they have the high resolution stuff, they need.
Need to produce that. I know in the beginning, Russ Coulthard had mentioned them, and he mentioned that Jake Barber wanted to reach out to us. We did respond. We were willing to talk to him. We haven't heard anything back. So, and then of course, we had Gary Nolan that got involved, and he's been, supporting and propping up Skywatcher, and even inviting them to the Soul Foundation conference. I don't know what that's a specific agenda that Gary has. I won't comment on it. I know that we weren't invited to the Soul Foundation.
Sorry to say, I was there, and I did ask Jake Barber in the audience, and it's all recorded about that statement around having stuff out by the end of the year that they could show and produce and share. And he said that may bleed over into 2026. It might be January, it might be February, it might be a rolling 12 month, not necessarily a calendar year. They are going through 10 terabytes of data and peer review and whatnot. So hopefully perhaps that data comes out, like you say, and people get to pour through it and go through it. Because, I don't think anything you've said there is completely unfair. So,
When you talk about 10 terabytes, we've got to a lot of data. Like I said, we don't have a team go through. We have to go through.
It takes a lot of time.
Especially 5 years, 5 years worth.
It takes a lot of time.
Like I said, I have nothing personal against them and wish them luck. It just, as soon as they produce the data, it'll be interesting to see what they got.
Perhaps one day Skywatcher versus Nightcrawler will be a cool movie to show on Netflix, dramatized. But listen, guys, I'm going to give you the final word. What do you want to let the audience know, the viewers know, what's coming up in the coming months, and perhaps even any idea on when those documentaries may be available?
Hopefully, early next year.
Yeah, we're going to be talking to one of the film crews, 4 o'clock today. The other one we had spoken to, they're still working on some finishing B-reel footage that they're putting in editing. Hopefully we'll get dates soon about when they'll be out.
Yeah, and one thing that keeps coming up that we want to reinforce is this thing with working in silos. I mean, there's so many groups out there that still they still don't want to share share resources and share, you know, experiences one way or another with other groups. And, you know, this is an area that, you know, I think we really need to work together. And we're, you know, we're open to anybody that's willing to work with us, share resources.
Not even necessarily about sharing resources, it's just about collaboration.
Collaboration. That's huge.
I mean, when people have, you know, tightly close up what they have, and, you know, they seem to have a specific agendas, whether it's jockeying for funding or something else, or it's their own institutional or, you know, politics. Right. You know, it's not really good for this effort right. going forward.
If you know something, you know, share it. You know, yeah. I mean, if it's something that's classified and that sort of thing, I mean, obviously there's you know, there are very specific reasons not to, but you know, there is a lot of information that can be learned from other groups. And by putting resources together, I think we can learn a lot more very quickly.
And as far as that end, but classifying, we've had better success with federal agencies in working with them. It's the UAP community that seems to be more of an issue.
Yeah, that space. Yeah.
Even especially the academic end, it's like, you know, with their own politics or whatever.
Yeah, it's tough.
That's all for this episode of That UFO Podcast. Thank you so much for listening and watching. If you enjoyed the show, please follow, subscribe, and leave a rating or review wherever you get your podcast. It really helps others find the show. If you're watching on YouTube, hit like, subscribe, and turn on notifications so you don't miss future episodes. You can also support the show directly and get early access, ad-free episodes, and bonus content on Patreon or by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube memberships. All the links are over at thatufopodcast.com or in the show description below, along with merchandise and more. Don't forget, you can also pick up a copy of my book, Atlas of Unidentified Flying Objects, available now in all good bookstores and through online retailers, including Amazon. Big thank you again to all of you for listening and tuning in. Until next time, keep looking up. You never know what you might see.
It wasn't a tic-tac and not quite a saucer, more like a hubcap designed by Chaucer. A little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right outside of my window, and when I shoved out the screen, he made it an issue. I don't think he expected me to see his ass, but I'd had some champagne and smoked a little rain.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.